obsessed.
Bob. Yeah, it's working.
Yay!
Oh, I didn't write my list.
God damn it.
Hi, I'm Ash.
I'm Laura, and Ashley's writing a list. otherwise, we just waffle and we don't know what we're doing.
I mean, we waffle anyway.
Mm, yeah, true.
You're blonde.
I am blonde.
Yeah. What happened?
Okay, so what happened was I had about several million years of color buildup in my hair, and I had black hair over the top of that. So I was like, well, I'm going to strip that. And then it worked. And then I did another round and I got it to like this kind of light, kind of orangey kind of color. But I'm like, no, that'll work for demi-permanent. So then I tried to put turquoise through it and it took on the roots and the ends and nowhere else. So then I had basically turquoise, then orange, and then turquoise on the end. And it was a shit show. And I was like, I need help. So I finally decided to go to the hairdresser. 4 hours later, I walked out a blonde.
And that's great.
Thank you.
I'm a very big advocate for hairdressers.
Yeah, I hate going to hairdressers only because I hate sitting still. And I really struggle having people like touching my head for that long.
Yeah.
I just get all itchy and agitated. But I was like, I either have to re-dye it dark and do that again, which I didn't want to do.
Which adds more build up.
Yep. So I was like, big girl pants, Laura, we're going to the hairdresser.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
So looks great.
It's not quite finished, so I have to go back in like 4 weeks, and it's either going to be toned and bleached, depending how it settles. But I was like so afraid they were going to be like, oh, we can maybe get you to like a chocolate or like a caramel, but it'll take like a few sessions. But no, straight in, came out a blonde, and I was like, you guys are wizards. I love you. And I was like, oh, it was a great day. So
magicians, fabulous.
Yeah. Highly recommend.
Yes, always go to a hairdresser because it's just easier in the long run.
Yep.
To be honest.
But the one credit to me was that they were, because I did a consult on the Tuesday and then I had my appointment on the Wednesday, and I think she was expecting my hair to be in much worse condition than it was.
You were over exaggerating a little bit.
Well, I was just like, look, I don't know, I'm not a hairdresser, but I'm like, there's a lot of buildup. I haven't bleached it myself, that was where I drew the line, but I'm like, it's in interesting shape. And I sent like a picture and she was like, oh, okay. And so then
she's like, ah, oh, fuck, another one.
Yeah, she's like, oh, this is gonna be a challenge. But no, like, they were ready, they were like, let's do this. And I was like, look, I'm like, in between when I've colored my hair, I've done like treatments and oils, and I'm like, I've tried to keep it pretty healthy. And she's like, it's actually not bad. And I was like, thank you.
That's good.
So yeah, so it's all bleached, I have hair, it hasn't all burnt and fried off, so
wonderful.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to get mine done again soon, I think.
Yay.
Which I think I'll be excited for. Make it like a day.
Hell yeah. Do a pamper
nice day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I haven't really done anything this week.
Oh, really?
No.
That's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've just been playing my game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big computer game nerd, for those who haven't already figured that out. And the newest or the final update of the early access of Subnautica Below Zero came out. And so I've sunk like 50 hours in the last week, maybe less than a week, maybe like 3 days.
I think 3 days is probably more accurate knowing you.
It's been a lot. I've played a lot and I've gotten really far and I'm really excited and I really love it. So that's all I've been doing and that's all I likely will do.
Nothing wrong with that. Live your best gaming life.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even think I've watched anything.
Oh.
I've just had streams and stuff playing in the background so that I don't have to pay attention. I don't know. I was watching Lord of the Rings on Netflix, but it's like the 7,000th time I've seen it. So.
Yeah, that's not a new thing.
So that's just like, it's just background noise now.
Yeah.
It was weird watching the regular edition when I own the extended editions, because I was like, where's the bit that, like, I just forgotten that there's two different versions of the same movie.
Not all of us can be elite like you.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
But that's kind of it. That's all I've really done.
Oh, I had a really busy week, actually. Like, nothing very exciting. It's just like, you know those weeks when everything falls into one?
Mm.
So I had like 5 appointments. We were going to do 3 episodes of the podcast, but that kind of didn't end up happening. So we've done 2 because we did last Sunday and now we're doing this Sunday. But I did that. Did I see anyone this week? Oh my God, I can't even remember. I've watched Maths. That's been entertaining.
Married at First Sight.
Yeah, I sometimes forget that people don't know what that is. Like, not everyone is as obsessed as I am, but oh, that show's gotten to be a lot. Like, I don't know. It's just like, it's gone from the fun drama to now it's like, I'm genuinely sad now. And
aww,
it's just, everyone's just yelling at each other and there's like horrible misogynists and you're just like, I don't like it. But it's still entertaining and I still
mean, what
watch
do you
it.
Expect when you make strangers marry each other before they even met?
Well, I think my favorite part of the show is listening to the experts make their justifications for why they've put these two horrible people together. And they're like, oh, they...
Social justice.
Well, yeah, okay, that too.
We don't want anybody else to have to deal with you.
Yeah, go just make each other insane. But no, they'll be sitting there and they'll be like, oh, like they both want kids and like, you know, but that's like all they have in common and they're trying to make it like all justified, but you're just sitting there and you're like,
they're the
no
ones
way.
That were left over at the end that they couldn't find anybody else for.
Well, that's the thing. They have thousands of applicants and they make these horrible matches that are just never going to work, but they're
good
like,
for TV though, I guess.
Oh, 100%. Like they're just trying to make drama, but it's like just listening to them try and justify their actions. You're like, come on guys. Like you just want to see them fight each other. Like,
that's terrible.
It is terrible, but I still watch it every episode and I'm watching it tonight because it's the dinner party. No, it's the commitment ceremony and like four of them are on the verge of breakup and like three of them have left already. And
I hope somebody out there knows what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, someone will know and it'll... Oh, Steph will know.
Okay, there we go. This is the Steph segment where you just talk about Married at First Sight.
We literally text each other while it's on and we're like, oh my God, they just...
Trash.
It's so good. But yeah, so that's been my week.
Well, that sounds like a nightmare.
For some, yes.
This is a short intro this week because I think you're going first. I went first last week. And this is the final part.
This is the final part. Part three. Yep, so final part of my series, looking into the Conjuring movies. If you haven't listened to part one and two, do that, please. I worked really hard on this. So, this one is looking into the Nun demon, who's later revealed to be Valak, or Valak, depending how you want to say it.
Bless you.
I think they say Valak in the movie.
Valak sounds rad. It sounds like a demon name.
All right, we'll stick with Valak.
Valak sounds like a vampire, or like shellac.
Well, it's V-A-L-A-K, so it could be either.
I like Valak. Valak sounds like medieval.
Mm.
Yep.
All right, Valak it is.
Executive decision.
Yeah, decided. So Valak features in The Conjuring 2, The Nun, which is the movie called The Nun.
That's a creative title.
And also,
is it about a wizard?
It is not about a wizard.
Rude.
Yeah. You might be surprised with a title like The Nun, but no, it's not about a wizard.
Can you imagine if it wasn't actually about a nun?
Oh,
that's just so funny.
That would be funny. I think titles should just be misleading from now on. Actually, don't like that. I don't like that.
Ours aren't exactly the most forward thing either.
But ours make perfect sense once you've listened to it.
Yeah, afterwards they do.
But, Valak also has a brief appearance in Annabelle Creation, which I talked about last time.
Yeah.
So, we'll do some brief little synopses like I did last time. So, if you don't want spoilers, skip ahead. But really, you should have seen these movies, which Ashley hasn't. But
fuck you.
I just have to be petty sometimes, you know that.
Okay, when we play Monopoly, because mm-hmm. we've agreed we're going to play Monopoly yep. at some point, you can pick a horror movie and we'll watch it.
So many choices.
And then the next time,
mm-hmm.
we're watching Lord of the Rings.
Fine.
Shake on it.
Deal.
Deal.
Your finger just cracked.
Your hands are so cold.
They're always cold.
My finger cracked and your hands are freezing. Oh,
are we okay?
No.
We're falling apart. Okay, so
yeah, you would have had to been together to fall apart. We're just assembled this way.
Yeah, I feel like we're like, you know,
terribly
when you
we're factory rejects.
Yep, pretty much. I'm not even gonna argue with that.
No, move on.
Okay, so synopsis. So The Conjuring 2, weirdly enough, has nothing to do with The Conjuring 1. So it's set in 1977 in London and follows Peggy Hodgson, who is having financial difficulties trying to raise her children, Margaret, Janet, Johnny, and Billy, after her husband left to go live with the neighbor.
They are the most basic bitch names ever.
I know. It just reminds me of like,
unless Billy was a girl, then that's cute.
No, I think it was a boy.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of like The Sound of Music when there's like 100 children and they just all have these like names.
You think they would have names?
Oh god,
keep going, it's fine, we're fine, don't worry about it guys,
don't worry about us.
Laura didn't write this today, it's all right. To be fair, I wrote mine this morning while I was eating breakfast.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get up till 10:30, so. Anyway, so when her daughter Janet starts to sleepwalk and claims to talk to the spirit of an old man, Peggy does not believe it in the beginning, but she soon starts to witness supernatural phenomena in her house and concludes that Janet is possessed by a demon. Her neighbor and friends call the police, and the officers also see the mysterious events. One of them then calls the local priest, and Ed and Lorraine Warren are then called in to travel to London and see what's going on. They team up with paranormal investigators Maurice Gross and the skeptical Anita Gregory to see whether it could be a hoax. They witness weird events, but they do not conclude it is true. What is happening at the Hodgson house?
So that's the synopsis of Conjuring 2.
Yeah.
Right.
The Nun, which was released in 2018, follows the story of this was a really confusing one to copy and paste, to be honest, so I'm going to reword it. So basically, a troubled exorcist called Father Burke and an idealistic young nun are sent by the Vatican to investigate another nun's unaccountable suicide in Romania in 1952. Before long, intense encounters with the supernatural, they basically face a bunch of evil, they get really scared, and they find out that it's a malevolent nun who was featured in The Conjuring 2. Undoubtedly, there's a dark secret behind the Abbey's thick stone walls and an ancient dark force that craves to resurface. Will Father Burke and Sister Irene escape the wrath of the nun? Dun dun.
Do they?
Kind of. So, when we get to the true story of all of this stuff, this is where it's the most made up. So, The Conjuring...
When we get to the true story is when it's the most made up.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like I've done these episodes in order of how realistic it is, because the first Conjuring had a lot of truth to it. Like, it was very accurate.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Second one, kind of close.
Kind of based on it. This one is, like, the nun is basically a composite character of a bunch of random shit.
So, it's a bit more of a money grab than anything else.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you could be like...
I mean, that happens.
I mean, they're good movies.
Look
so
at all the extra Transformers we have.
Oh, let's not go there. So, yeah, for this reason, this episode might be a bit disjointed, a bit all over the place, but I've done my best.
As opposed to other episodes we do.
Yeah.
Not your stories in general, just the whole podcast as a theme.
Oh, just our little trails off and when we just start talking shit for no reason.
I'm pretty sure my Instagram bio is I am incredibly inconsistent.
That's accurate.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll start with the link to the Warrens' actual life, because there really isn't a lot in common at all. So basically, when it comes to the true story, there's sort of two things that the director, James Wan, kind of heard and kind of put together, and then it led to the story. So the first was according to the Warrens' son-in-law, who became involved in the paranormal investigating as well. He would go around do public speaking as well. Like, he's all up in it.
Son-in-law. Right.
Son-in-law. So he tells the story of when Lorraine and Ed once encountered a spectral nun whilst on a trip to England sometime in the 1970s. Upon researching further into the church's history, they found that there were numerous reports of paranormal activity, including phantom bells ringing, a headless monk who was seen roaming around and was thought to leave cryptic messages on the church's walls, and a ghost who appeared as a nun and was said to be the spirit of an actual nun who was buried alive within the church's walls as a punishment for having an affair with a monk. It's not said whether the headless monk and that nun are related, but, I mean...
I feel like I've heard that before.
Oh, really?
The story about the nun being buried in the walls for having an affair with a monk.
You might have.
Maybe I have.
Damn.
Maybe I've watched it. No, I haven't. I know I haven't. Sorry.
Still be cool if you heard of it, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically that was all the story they heard. The way the story goes, apparently Lauren saw the nun ghost in the church's graveyard, but nothing happened. So she wasn't harmed in any way. She just saw it, and then she kind of just walked away. But that was, like, the story she told.
Where is it?
It didn't say. It just said England. There wasn't specifics about which church they went to or anything like that.
I think, I'm just going to type for a second. Hold on. The title of most haunted place in England is the one with the nun in the wall story.
Huh.
I think that's why I know it. It might also just be like a story that's attributed to a lot of places because nobody can confirm it. But I think that's where I know it from.
Mm-hmm.
I've literally written England's most haunted nun in wall affair with monk.
Perfect.
Borley Rectory.
Okay, that sounds familiar.
Ed and Lorraine both went,
mm-hmm.
and so did Harry Price.
It's all coming back together.
I knew I'd heard of it somewhere.
Okay.
Because I drove past it when Mum and I were in England, because I wanted to look at it.
Yeah. Did you go in?
No.
Oh. I want to go see some ghosties.
Anyway.
That's awesome, though, that we... You figured out something for my story.
Hey, look at me.
That's exciting. Oh, I'm excited now.
First and last time for everything.
You don't know. You might know something else. Okay, so that was the first story with the whole nun in the wall. The second story was when Lorraine Warren told James Wan about another spectral entity that appeared to her in her own home, but she said it looked like a swirling tornado vortex with a hooded figure inside.
No, I don't like that. That's some Charmed shit.
Yeah, it is. Like the whole tornado. Yeah. Oh, Charmed is such a good show.
It's on Stan.
Oh, yeah. I should go through it again.
When you start it, tell me.
Okay.
We'll start it together.
Yes. Okay, so basically the director heard both of these stories, and at this time he was really struggling to come up with an idea for how his final demon should look. Like, he had pretty much... like nailed down everything else for the movies, but he was like, I don't know what it should look like. He didn't like the idea of the tornado vortex with a hooded figure inside, because he's like, that would have to be CGI and I really don't want to do that. Right. He wanted something more realistic. So what he decided to do...
okay.
Yeah. But what he decided to do was, he was like, I'm going to put the demon in a nun, like be a nun figure, because the nun in, or the demon in the movie directly targets Lorraine. And he's like, what would be more personal than a demon targeting her face and being in the figure of a nun and have that whole, like, iconography thing going on?
Yeah.
So he really...
It's actually not a bad leap to take.
It was pretty cool when I heard all that. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Because if you kind of look at it as like, oh, well, a creepy nun, yeah, that's creepy, I get it. You're kind of like, it's a bit shit. But yeah, he had this whole idea. And then the other thing, so in the movie, the nun demon targets her husband, but she has like premonitions about it, and then it's not until the end that you find out, oh my god, this was premonitions. So that kind of dual aspect of like targeting her faith and targeting her husband, it was like the most targeted attack that he could think of. And then this whole idea of like targeting your faith became the basis of the nun movie, and he basically wrote the whole thing around it.
It's cool.
Which was very cool. So then, speaking of the nun movie, another major influence on the film wasn't the Warrens at all, but it was another movie that was made in 1986 called The Name of the Rose, which was based on a 1980 book of the same title by Umberto Eco, which I don't know who that is, but
bless you,
he wrote it. So the plot for this movie, and anyone who's seen the nun movie, you'll be sitting there being like, that's hella similar. So the plot of the movie is, it's set in the 14th century when William of Baskerville, played by Sean Connery, a renowned Franciscan monk and his apprentice Adzo of Melk. It's a lot of words I don't know here.
Bless you again.
Thank you. They travel to an abbey where a suspicious death has occurred. Using his deductive powers, William begins investigating what he believes to be murder. During the course of his investigation, several more monks wind up dead. With fear running through the abbey, the church leaders call forth Bernardo Gui.
Bless you.
G-U-I?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure. Fuck it, I don't know.
Close enough. William's nemesis to find the truth. So
that's okay.
Very close to the plot of the nun movie, because basically...
That one sounds shit.
Yeah, look, it's made in the 1980s and it didn't do very well in the box office.
I wonder why.
I did find that out. But obviously there are some differences. The biggest difference is that the villain in The Name of the Rose is a human, and in The Nun, it's a demon.
Yeah.
You know. But James Wan himself describes the movie The Nun as The Name of the Rose crossed with The Conjuring.
Right.
So he's like, not even...
Name of the Rose sounds like it should have been a Sherlock Holmes episode.
It does. Mm. I think that's maybe why it failed. Like, it's enough to be an episode, but not a full movie.
Yeah.
You know. So that kind of explains the origin of, like, the story and how it was loosely linked to the Warrens. And, oh, that was me. I forgot I can get messages on here.
Naughty corner.
Damn it, Steph, that was you as well.
I'll leave it in.
Okay, so as I was saying, that kind of explains where the story came from, how it's loosely linked to the Warrens, but not really. So now we're going to get into the actual mythology of Valak, because there's some really cool stuff there.
Cool.
So the first thing is that it dates, like, the story of Valak and everything dates back to this, to 17th century mythology. So it's real old. The demon Valak...
is real old.
Is real old. It's even older than that, but we'll get to that in a second. And I'm going to do some very bad Latin in a minute. So.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yep. So, the demon Valak has made an appearance in numerous grimoires, the first of which being the Clavicula Solomonus Regis, which is in English called the Lesser Key of Solomon, which, like I said, dates back to the mid-17th century, but was said to be written about information that's centuries older than that. So, really old. For people who don't know, grimoires are, and this is a quote, books that contain a mix of spells, conjurations, natural secrets, and ancient wisdom, and a guide to the ceremonial art of commanding spirits both good and evil. So that's a quote from Professor Owen Davies of the University of Hertfordshire, who is an expert on the history of ghosts and witchcraft, and I want his job.
That's great.
I want to be able to have that on a business card and just give it to people.
I mean, you could just do that.
I could just, I can just be self-proclaimed. Yep, okay, that's happening. So the Lesser Key of Solomon was compiled for centuries. Like, it's a real, real old book, like I keep saying. And it features King Solomon, who is from the Bible. He's only featured in the Old Testament, and he's known for his wisdom, writings, and wealth. He became king in 967 BCE and built the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. Now, most people know King Solomon because he's the dude who did the whole cut the baby in half and then I know who the mother is.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that story. So he was the dude who did that. He was the last king of the ancient United Kingdom of Israel because it was split. And that's the truth according to the Bible, because basically there's not a lot of evidence that he ever actually existed. So
fair.
We're going to leave it at that. But according to legend, the grimoire of the Lesser Key of Solomon documents the 72 demons that Solomon summoned and vanquished during his reign. And how to do the same if you happen to come into contact with them yourself, which is kind of cool. So Valak, also known as Ulak, Valu, Volak, Dulas, Valak, Valix, and Valak, which they're all spelled differently.
Cool. Okay. Yep.
Is number 62 in the Lesser Key of Solomon, which I was like, someone like more up near one. But anyway, he was
a little bit higher up.
Yeah, they were 62. And is described in the following excerpt. The 62nd spirit is Volak, or Valak, or Valu. He is a president mighty and great, and appeareth like a child with angel's wings riding on a two-headed dragon. His office is to give true answers to hidden treasures and to tell where serpents may be seen, the which he will bring unto the exerciser without any force or strength being by him employed. He governeth 38 legions of spirits, and his seal is thus, and then it has a picture of a fancy little seal that represents him. So, in case that made no sense, basically Valak isn't a scary nun demon at all. He's a baby with wings who rides around on a two-headed dragon and is the president of hell, commands all the other demons, is super good at finding snakes, and then he uses those snakes to attack you, and is just all around a bit of a dick.
He'd have a hell of a time in Australia.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to think he's
a... That is a very convoluted demonic resume.
Oh, yeah. The other thing is, so he's described as being... Where is it? I got to find it somewhere here in my notes. So he's described as like an officer and like the... like a prince or something like that. But that doesn't really mean... Oh, no. He's described as a president. But from what I... Yeah, which I was like...
President of hell.
Yeah, so
that's such a lame title.
It is, but also I was reading...
At least he's not treasurer.
Oh, God.
That's worse.
I'm the treasurer of hell. Who gives a shit? But I did a bit of reading about that, and it said, like, a lot of demons will have a title of, like, prince or princess or officer or president. They all have that title. It really doesn't mean anything.
Prince of hell sounds great.
I think that sounds
King of
cool.
hell sounds great.
Yeah. I can be
president
king.
Of hell. really doesn't sound that good. Also, if you're a president, I don't think you can also have a king and a prince. I don't think that's how that works.
Well, I was also thinking, like, presidents are generally, like, elected. So do they have elections in hell as well?
Oh! Demonic voting booths.
Yeah, they all come in and like scribble on a piece of paper. They're like, I want Valak.
No, they have to drop blood on the picture of the guy they want.
Oh, that's metal as fuck.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the true Valak apparently. So because Valak appears in childlike form, it's believed that he uses, I say he, it all it said was like, it never appears in a female form, but it's also not a dude either. It just,
it.
So
it's a demon.
It's a demon. It is. But because Valak appears in childlike form, it's believed that it uses the innocence of children to lure victims in. So it kind of appears on this two-headed dragon. It's like, oh, look, but I'm cute. But then it's like, is a demon.
So it's a regular child.
Yeah. Just a little bit more magical, I guess.
It's just with wings.
Yeah.
Which is worse. One thing you don't want to give an infant is wings.
Oh, God, no. That's why I've always found, like, cherubs really frightening.
They are kind of gross.
They are kind of gross. And they're always naked, which I'm just like, that's weird. You know, just put it in, like, a onesie or something. But it's also believed that Valak was associated with the Children's Crusade, which I didn't know what that was, but I looked at it. I looked it up. It happened in, like, 1212. And basically all these people were just like, we're going to march to Rome and convert the Muslims. And then they kind of just walked for a bit. And then the Vatican was like, nah, go home. We don't want you to do that. And they were like, yeah, okay. And that was it. Okay. They can't like even confirm.
It's a pretty good crusade.
Well, yeah. I was
as
like,
far as crusades go, it's not the worst.
Well, yeah. I was like, nobody died. So like, that's pretty cool. But it, like the only reason it's called the Children's Crusade is because apparently it started with these two boys who had a vision from Jesus that was like, go crusade. And then they were like, yep, okay. And then that's how it happened.
Easy.
That was very quick reading I did, but I was like, okay. And then the other thing that Valak is associated with is the 130 children of Hamelin who suddenly disappeared on June
26, 1248. What?
I'm going to do an episode on this, so I'm not going to go into that now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Hmm.
Stay tuned. So if you're wondering why you haven't heard of King Solomon's demon vanquishing or the Lesser Key of Solomon in your religious education classes... because I had to do those.
Same. That's why we're here now.
Yeah. This is because any mention of all this is considered blasphemous for the church, and the grimoire itself found its way onto the Vatican's Index Librorum Prohibitorum, or List of Prohibited Books. This list was scrapped in 1966, but funnily enough, a lot of priests didn't really listen to that, and so they had copies, so that's why we still know what it is. Which I'm like, that's cool.
Mm.
Another interesting thing to note is that it's believed that the demon Valak has origins from the ancient Greek god Hermes, which then also has basis on the ancient Roman god Mercury. The common thread here is that Hermes is often depicted with a staff made up of two entwined serpents, which of course is now represented with the double-headed dragon that Valak rides around on, and also his ability to like control snakes. There's also different interpretations of Valak, which is the same with any demon you look into, which is if you look at like the Catholic side of things, demons, bad, they're horrible, they're scary. But if you look at more of like either a Greek kind of interpretation or like a, even like a Wiccan kind of thing, they're more like gods to be called upon in energies. So there's kind of this mischievous side to Valak that sometimes gets mentioned, which of course is Hermes is supposed to be really mischievous as well. So there's kind of common threads. And to be honest, I could have gone way more into the origins of everything, but it was getting very convoluted. And I was just like,
yeah,
I don't get it. So this was just a bit of fun. I found a really cool paragraph while I was researching all this that was talking about summoning Valak and like when you're using the demon in ritual. And I wanted to include it because this paragraph made me laugh.
As long as you don't summon it into my house. Then that's fine.
It's not a spell, it's okay.
Okay, good.
It's just describing it. So, it says, Valak is a heavily petitioned demon. He is used for curse works like revenge, but is also thought to help find money through random events. He is who you call on when you want a raise or promotion, an inheritance, or before financial negotiations. Valak doesn't work for free, however, and demonic magic demands certain sacrifices. Luckily, Valak is partial to licorice, as well as gin, knives, coins, and public proclamations in his name. He does not respond to sexual offerings or blood, and summoning Solomnic spirits is traditionally done through ceremonial magic.
Licorice.
Licorice.
That's my favorite bit.
The baby on the two-headed dragon knives. Likes licorice and knives.
It's me! Although I don't like black licorice, I only like red licorice.
Yeah, no, I think he likes black licorice.
No, he's wrong.
Oh, I thought we found your spirit demon for a second.
Well, I mean, the two-headed dragon, that's pretty dope.
Yeah.
I'd eat black licorice if I could be that.
All right, cool.
I do like knives and coins, though.
There you go. but yeah, I thought that was a hoot and a half. So basically, that's the origins of everything. There was just bits of everything. And the only things that were in common between Valak, the mythological demon, and Valak in the movie is the name and the moniker Marquis of Snake, of Snakes, which they refer to him as like once. But that's about it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I tried to find why Valak specifically, like why not something else? Why not? I don't know. I just don't know. So that's the origin of the Nun Demon and Valak. It was not what I expected, to say the least.
Yeah.
I thought there would be a bit more to it than that, but it was still interesting to look in at, you know, where did it come from? And
I really want you to look into the Borley Rectory now as well to see if it is linked.
All right.
Because I wonder why it wasn't mentioned.
Well, I think most of the articles I read specifically were about The Conjuring. So it was more just like they didn't care which place they went to. It was just like, oh, they went to a church and this happened. And then this is how the movie happened, which I'm like, I need details.
Yeah, because the nun figure for a lot of that and like part of the story, I feel like it had something to do. Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Well, because the convent that they film at for the movie is actually in Romania, so they actually filmed on location
there.
That's
rad.
But the place where they filmed didn't have that history, so I did check that out. But yeah, I was sort of like, to be honest, it messes with my head a bit because I like things all wrapped up in nice little packages, and this is
a bit of a cash grab, just put things together that sound good to make it work.
Exactly, which is kind of what we saw in the last Annabelle movie, where it was like they were just kind of making shit up at this point, which they're good movies. Like, it paid off, you know, like they are fun to watch. But when you're like nerds.
Cool concept.
Yeah, but when you're nerds like us and we're like, yeah, but we want it based on truth, it gets a bit annoying.
Yeah.
But yeah, that wraps up my special series on the Conjuring movies.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, you should watch
them. I'm kind of glad that we ended on that one because it makes me feel less terrified.
Yeah. That was...
Because I didn't like the first one at all.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, funnily enough, so I won't say who it is because she'll get mad at me, but someone in my life is terrified of the nun. Absolutely terrified. Like, can't look at pictures of it, can't watch the movie.
Oh, really?
Absolutely terrified. But I found out a fact that really helps with that. So the actress that plays the nun in the movies is in The Princess Diaries and plays the Baroness.
Oh, nice.
And I sent her a picture and I was like, if you ever get scared, like, just look at the nose, because she has a very distinctive nose and it's like the dead same in the nun. And it's just,
oh yeah,
see.
Oh, I can also see why she would be scared of the nun.
Yep. It's a pretty scary character, and like, it kind of shrieks at you and it moves in paintings and it does some pretty gnarly stuff. But admittedly, when I watch it, I get a little bit scared, particularly if I decide to watch it at like 10 o'clock at night and just freak myself out. But
fun.
Yeah, so it's a good movie, but yeah, not based on the Warrens a whole lot, which was a little disappointing. But there we go, guys.
That was great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm kind of glad it's over.
Yeah, but now, like, what am I going to come up with next?
Yeah, fuck. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have thought about that.
Dun, dun.
So, my case today is the murder of Emma Kayser.
Oh.
And this is, I got pretty much most of my information from Murder by Gaslight. So, it's all, like, 1800s, 19th century murders.
Ooh.
Yes. So, 1894, Charles Kayser, working as a cartoon artist and living in a hotel in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, meets a waitress named Emma, who works at the same hotel. Charles falls very ill, and Emma, while still working at the hotel, takes on nurse duties and works to help him recover. Within a year, the two fall in love and they get married.
Aww.
They move to Philadelphia, settle in Norristown, and they open a general store. On the 28th of October, 1896,
Taser and his wife are riding in their buggy into town when they are approached by a bearded man in a black overcoat. Charles at the time is 24 and Emma is 32. Mm. So the man is later referred to as the Highwayman in all the statements. So I'm just going to call him the Highwayman.
Okay.
Pulls out a revolver and demands the couple's watches, Emma's purse, and any and all jewelry that they have. Charles and Emma oblige. They remove their watches. Emma hands the highwayman her purse, and as she bends to remove the necklace, the highwayman shoots her in the temple.
That's not cool.
No.
She was doing what you want to do.
So he takes another shot, this time at Charles, but misses, and the shot simply grazes him in the arm. The highwayman disappears, and Charles is left injured and distraught, and he begins calling out for help.
Shit.
Charles is found by Frank Mansell and his daughter, who see that he is injured, and while he's calling out, "Murder, help," the two believe that Emma is simply unconscious.
I mean, she's been shot in the head.
I don't know much about the 1800s, but you think that at the turn of the century there, people would know that if you get shot in the head, you're gonna die.
Yeah, they should know, like, head, blood, gun, bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they hop into their buggy, and they beckon Charles to follow. So he follows with his dead wife in the buggy next to him, and they go to the office of Dr. Mann in a nearby town.
Oh, I always forget they don't have, like, hospitals and stuff.
Yeah. Hmm. Upon arrival, Mann can see that Emma's dead. And then they return to Norristown and report the crime to the police.
That's not funny, but I've just pictured
it's like... also, it's not, like, it's not funny, but it's hilarious because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, like, this doctor just comes out and goes, "Guys, this woman's dead."
Yeah.
Like, what do you want me to do?
But also, the husband was yelling out murder. So, like, he's aware that she's dead. Why would you follow them to a doctor's office in a different town to go back to the other town and then go to the police?
Yeah, not a lot of thinking going on.
No. So police are actually instantly suspicious of Charles, and his grief is described as overblown, which I hate, because if your wife was just shot next to you, you'd probably be pretty distraught.
Yeah. Do you watch Grey's Anatomy at all?
No.
Oh, okay. There's an episode where this woman's husband is building basically a rocket for a rocket launcher in his backyard, and it goes off. And so he gets shot, like, in the abdomen. It's a very intense episode, but she's just screaming the entire time. She can't even talk. She's just, like, shrieking endlessly. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would drive me nuts, and I would probably want to punch her, but yeah.
One of the doctors screams in her face back, and then that's how they get her to stop.
Good. Good. So he's unable to give a statement, and he's just hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Mansell was able to take the detectives to the crime scene, and a quick search turned up the couple's stolen items and Emma's purse, empty of the $53, which at the time was over $1,600 US.
Mm-hmm.
Hidden under a rock about 60 feet from the approximate location of the buggy, and they also found a .32 caliber revolver with two bullets missing in the same spot.
Weird.
Yeah. So I'm going to rob these people and shoot one of them, try to shoot the other one, and then hide the stuff under a rock.
Hmm. I mean, like, the money was taken, but why wouldn't you take everything?
Yeah, well, the watches and the necklace and stuff were still there.
Hmm. Something's not adding up here.
Yeah. The autopsy investigation finds out that the shot to Emma's left temple was not at all the right angle to have been shot from the ground, but must have been shot by someone on the same level, someone also in the buggy.
Oh.
Which, good on 1800s detectives.
That's pretty, I mean, like, this is the era where they're like, oh, you have a cold, better put a leech on your forehead. Like, that's good stuff.
You're upset? Do cocaine about it.
Yeah. Which is like, okay.
Kaisa is then questioned for hours, but refuses to tell the police anything. He's too distraught.
Mm.
Instead, they are able to find out themselves that 2 months earlier, the Kaisers had made a joint will, each naming the other as the beneficiary, and that both bodies be cremated, which is not something that was usually put in wills.
Yeah, that's a bit specific.
Investigators also found that Kaiser had taken out multiple insurance policies on his wife, totaling over $10,000 at the time, which US is about $313,000, and in Australian that's about $410,000.
Mm.
And that soon the first premiums would be due, which would be about $1,800.
That's Suspicious as hell.
Yeah. The police inform Kayser that he's under arrest for the murder, and his response is he would complete suicide before he would be locked up.
What a drama queen.
Which, if you're trying to play innocent, that's not how to do that.
No, you usually go...
You feign shock, at least.
Yeah, you go, but I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Not, I'll kill myself if you arrest me.
Yeah. Kayser then pulled out a penknife and lunged it at his throat, but was thwarted by the officers before his attempt could succeed. Which is a pretty guilty statement, if you ask me.
It's questionable behavior.
Yeah. The next morning in his cell, Kayser appeared to suffer multiple epileptic fits, but it was quickly determined he was totally faking.
Funny about that.
Yeah. Now, prior to the attack on his wife, there were witnesses saying that the couple's buggy was actually followed by another one before the attack, and that the same couple in the buggy behind them was a couple that they regularly met with. This is a well-dressed man and a woman exclusively in black.
See, I'm thinking now, I'm like, there's two options here. Either he killed his wife and he's just faking everything, or there's the potential that someone else was in the car and he's just like having a nervous breakdown in the prison, basically. I don't know which one it is. That's my two theories.
I like them. They're good. They're both wrong.
Hmm.
But they're good.
Now I'm interested.
So it wouldn't be long before the couple were identified. So the man was an insurance agent, James Clemmer, and they weren't like engaged or together or anything, but just seemed to be like a woman that he was hanging out with, I guess. Lizzie DeKalb.
Maybe like a friends with benefits kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think they did that then.
They did that. They just didn't name it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that's probably what it was. So Clemmer, being an insurance agent and the policies being a large motive for the murder, it was determined that the couple, in conspiracy with Kayser, plotted the murder for Emma. What the fuck did I just say? In conspiracy with Kayser, plotted to murder Emma for the payout.
Okay.
A reward was issued for the capture of Clemmer and DeKalb.
Mm-hmm.
February 1897, Kayser is tried for the murder of his wife and found guilty. He's granted a new trial in July, and in November, while waiting for the outcome of the new trial, Lizzie DeKalb is arrested, betrayed by her current lover for the reward.
Oh, that cuts you deep.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, I'm happy about it, but like she'll be like, how dare you?
She obviously couldn't have been that great.
Yeah.
So DeKalb is ready to confess and also throw the blame as far away from herself as she can get.
I didn't do it.
Yeah. Her statement originally read that Clemmer jumped out of the buggy as they came close to the Kaysers and just left her in the buggy. He put on an overcoat and a fake beard. And then Kayser held his wife as Clemmer approached with the revolver. But Clemmer could not shoot. DeKalb then claimed that she heard Kayser threaten, shoot dog or I'll kill every one of you.
Meesh.
Right?
It's a bit much.
Yeah. Then, after DeKalb is granted a lawyer, her now 21-page statement, so it goes from just like a small paragraph to 21 pages.
Jesus.
Goes more along the lines that James Clemmer has hypnotic powers.
Oh.
And that she was under his spell and would do anything he told her to. DeKalb claimed no knowledge of the two's conspiracy to kill Emma.
I would love to read old court documents because they'd be just as wild as this.
Yeah.
Just like powers and weird shit happening. They're sitting there like, yep, absolutely.
So DeKalb claims she heard two shots in the distance but did not see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Clemmer then came back to the buggy as they sped away. Then came back to the buggy and they sped away. In Norristown, they took a trolley to Philadelphia, and after that they checked into a hotel, and then he told her what had happened. Lizzie DeKalb agreed to be charged as an accessory after the fact, and she received 2 years in prison.
Okay. How far away was she if she didn't see, like, gunshots or anything?
I don't know. I really don't think they would have been that far, but...
Dubious.
Yeah. Following DeKalb's confession, Kayser dropped his second trial appeal and confessed his own version of the same story.
Here we go.
He was also under Clemmer's hypnotic power, and the whole insurance scam was Clemmer's idea after Kayser found out his wife had cheated on him, with no proof that the claim was ever true.
Right.
Clemmer was the one that was going to pull the trigger, so Kaiser would be innocent.
Right.
Clemmer, after responding to a decoy personal ad pretending to be from Lizzie, which I love, was arrested November 26, 1897 in Trenton, New Jersey. He agreed to return to Pennsylvania, where he was tried and convicted of first-degree murder in July 1898, and he was hung on May 18th, 1899.
Yay!
So Clemmer's story was pretty much on par with the first statement that DeKalb wrote, mm-hmm. that he was meant to go and shoot her, he couldn't do it, so then the husband shot her himself, which right. accounts for the angle of the bullet as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. September 6, 1898, Kaiser was also due to hang, but on August 18th, while discussing placing him on suicide watch, they found Kaiser dead. He cut his wrists with a broken bed spring and strangled himself with the bed sheets.
It's not a satisfying end.
It's not. And then that's the story of the murder of Emma Kaiser.
That Sorry. Was very sad and very wild at the same time.
I know. And like originally in the articles and stuff that I read, it was called the Kaiser Conspiracy, which sounds so cool.
Yeah.
But also like it was just a bunch of greedy people wanted to get the insurance money. Although I couldn't find anywhere that there was any plans for the other two to share in the money.
Oh, so this was just like, hey, do you want to shoot my wife? And he's like, yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, he was an insurance agent, so I'm assuming he would be. Like, he would probably be the one that would process it to make sure it got through.
Yeah.
So he would have had to have been paid out.
Yeah, there would have been by some something. Sort of incentive, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know if I believe Lizzie, if she knew or if she didn't.
Yeah, and I don't think there's mind powers involved, just quietly.
I don't think he's a hypnotist, no.
So you don't get that. Nowadays, you just get like, oh, I was so in love with him and like he was a narcissist and like I couldn't control myself. No, I miss the mind powers. I think that was much
I was
better.
Under a hypnotic spell is a much better excuse.
Absolutely. And the witchcraft defense, I think that's always a good one. Just like, I was under a spell. They have voodoo dolls. It's not my fault.
They have voodoo dolls. I didn't do it. The voodoo did it.
Yeah. I was under a spell. I couldn't control myself. Done.
But yeah, so that's that story. I just wanted to do something that was like a little bit more old timey.
Yeah, sometimes I like a good old timey story.
And something that actually had an ending.
Yeah, that's
because my last two have not had endings.
No, just the old, and we still don't know who did it. It's like, fuck.
Sorry.
I mean, I do just as many of those, but it's just a bit more frustrating when it's a murder.
Yeah.
Like with paranormally stuff, it's like, well, yeah, how are we going to figure it out? But like murders, it's like, we should be able to figure this out.
Yeah. Someone knows something.
That's like the most annoying thing. The fact that like probably for every unsolved murder, someone knows something. Like a little something that would just tie it all together.
They might even not know that they know the thing.
Exactly.
That made sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That made sense to me. I don't know if anyone else it makes sense to you, but I got it.
Good. So there you go. There's a buggy full of murder for you.
I also like the buggies.
Buggies is a great word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Because they're like, in my head, I see like a little cart with a horse on it, but, and that's what it is. It's a horse and cart.
Oh, I thought it was like the old first cars.
No. Because they say that it had reins.
Huh.
So it's a horse and cart, I guess. I think it's just a smaller version than like a horse and carriage. It's open top.
The little ones.
Horse and convertible cart or something.
Mm, fancy. On a very, very dark note, did you see that a horse died in the middle of the CBD the other day?
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it was a horse and cart horse and it died and then they just covered it up with a blanket. And of course, like everyone is very, very upset about it because they're like, it's animal cruelty.
Yeah, those horses don't really get a lot of love.
They really don't.
No.
And it was really horrible because it was like the dead.
How do you remove that?
Well, that was the problem because
a vet ambulance.
Yeah. They do something, surely.
Probably the same way you get a whale off the beach.
Yeah. How do you get a whale off the beach?
Crane.
Hmm. Makes sense. But no, it was really horrible.
Or a high tide, but crane.
Yeah, I don't think there's high tides in the middle of the CBD.
No.
No. Maybe they like slip a blanket under it and they pull it or something. I don't know.
How far would you have to pull it? Horses are heavy.
They are heavy. I don't think I've thought this through.
No.
I don't think I want to be honest.
No.
But yeah, that reminded me of that. That's why I don't do those, like, the carriage rides around the city, because I'm just like, I don't want to support that.
I've never done one. Probably wouldn't.
I might have done one when I was very, very little, but it was, like, with family, and I don't think I had much say in the matter.
So. Yeah, probably not.
I think I was, like, tiny, but yeah, I'm just like, I might just go let it go. Just go run free.
You just let the horses off?
Yeah, but
they would get so confused.
Well, the other thing is there's traffic, and, like, I don't want the horses to run into traffic.
Probably just go hang out at the botanical gardens.
See, that would be nice. You can eat some flowers, chill in the grass.
Yeah.
Have a little nap.
Chase the rats.
Mm. We apparently have like a rat plague at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Melbourne.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well,
it's because nobody was outside for such a long time.
Mm. It's the animals' world now.
They need to let one fox into the botanical gardens.
Oh, God.
Just one.
Just one.
Just one.
Foxes are horrible. They're kind of cute, but they're horrible.
They're cute to look at, but they're mean.
Yeah, they just kill.
They do have very fluffy tails, though.
They do. Unlike cartoon foxes are really cute.
Yeah. Do you have anything for a recommendation station?
Oh, I do, actually.
Yeah?
Another YouTube channel.
Chanel.
Yeah. I'm just going to be a bougie bitch today. It's called Crime Beat. It's from Canada. It's a true crime. It's more like a TV show. So it's like full episodes. They go for like an hour. But the cases are really, really good. They have the actual people speaking. Like I just watched one on... Her name's Tori. Let me get her last name. I was watching it before I came here. Tori Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really notorious case in Canada. But they have just released part two on their coverage of that. But it's just really well researched. They talk to both of her parents. Like, really, really good. But all of the cases are, like, heartbreaking. So if you really like that sort of gets you kind of cases.
Gut-wrenching kind of cases.
These are really good. And it's also, like, I always think of Canada as, like, a really nice, happy place. So really horrible stuff happens there. So it kind of messes with my head a little bit. But really good. So that's probably my recommendation station.
That's cool. I don't think I've really watched anything new.
Your recommendation station is that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're into games, check out Subnautica. That's the original one. It's like a long playtime, but it's great story. It's all solo survival adventure. And it trended for a really long time as a horror game.
What?
And that's because it's like the ocean and you're by yourself and you go, I call it the deep down, dark deep down. And you go real deep and there's scary things.
I don't like it.
And Subnautica Below Zero is due to come out soon. And it's, I don't find Below Zero as scary or as threatening as the original. You're not by yourself. Like, there's multiple other characters and stuff, which is new, and voices and things, which I'm not used to. But it's great. So my recommendation station is, if you're into video games at all, check out Subnautica and Subnautica Below Zero.
There you go. I think they probably listened to the horror feedback and they were like, we should probably make some more characters so people stop getting scared.
I think they just wanted to do something a little bit different because you couldn't really do the same thing without it just being the same story.
Right. Okay.
So, but they've pulled it off really well and I'm excited to see if anything else changes between now and when it gets fully released. But I think it's pretty much done, which is great. It's a good game.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Woo.
I think that's kind of it. Bit of a shorter episode this week.
Yeah.
Happy Easter for those that participate. Hope you're having lots of chocolate and stuff and chocolate hangovers, which are great.
Yep. And just look at all the bunnies everywhere.
Yes. And if Easter's not really your thing or you forgot and you left it too late, then happy 50% off chocolate sales.
Oh, yes. It's the real celebration.
Yes. The after sale. Yeah. Well, I've been Ash.
I've been Laura.
And I think that's it. Go onto our Instagram and our Facebook page. Instagram is Dead Obsessed Podcast.
Yep.
Facebook page is just Dead Obsessed Podcast.
Yep, same everywhere.
And hit us up on Gmail at deadobsessedpod@gmail.com and send us your stories that your favorite stories that you interact with, and write them as if you were going to read it on the show, because we're going to read it out exactly as you write it.
Mm-hmm.
So
please do that, because I'm really excited to read people's stories, and I love hearing, like, if I know the person or if I know that it's come from someone that listens to us, it makes it real and you're just like, oh, this happened.
Yeah.
It's
so
good.
And we will probably, we've had a couple of messages and comments and some bits and pieces asking for merch lines. So we might be doing something like that within the next few months. I'm not going to tell you when. You'll just have to come onto the Instagram and have a look and participate, and you might see something there pop up in the next few weeks.
But we're not saying anything just yet.
No. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye. This is Dead Obsessed.